Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science, interviews, and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, an amazing transit of the planet Venus for Skywatchers, and the latest on NASA's newest mission to land on the planet Mars. Here's a scientist soundbite.
Wow, two great events within the span of, you know, just a few hours of each other. So the partial eclipse is on the morning of June 4th, if you live in the Americas, and the transit of Venus is on June 5th or 6th, depending on where you are on the globe.
That's Skywatcher Deborah Bird. More with her later, but first, science news of the week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
Research from biologists at the University of Texas at Austin has solved a 50-year-old mystery in health science. No one knew how the bacteria that give people cholera managed to resist one of our basic innate immune responses. Now the UT biologists think they have the answer. This work might clear the way for a new class of antibiotics. The new drugs wouldn't directly kill the bacteria that cause cholera, but instead they'd disable their defenses so that our own immune systems can do the killing. These findings were published in the May Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
By early June 2012, Venus is leaving the evening sky to pass into the morning sky. As it does, this brightest of planets is passing right in front of the Sun to stage one of the rarest of predictable astronomical phenomena, a transit of Venus across the Sun's face. This transit of Venus on June 5th and 6th is the last one for the 21st century. Deborah Bird will tell you more about it later in the program, and we have information about viewing the transit at earthsky.org.
Early in this century, in only 3 years, Lake Huron, one of the U.S. Great Lakes, went from being a salmon fishing mecca to a ghost of its former self. The biggest culprit? Invasive species, especially zebra mussels and quagga mussels. The native fish didn't eat them, and their populations crashed. And then salmon populations crashed, and that in turn caused the economies around Lake Huron to crash as well. Now, there is good news. Scientists say native fish populations are becoming more abundant again. The lake itself is recovering and expected to go back to a more natural state. Let's hope the recovery of the Lake Huron economy will follow.
Astronomer Jill Tarter, who stepped down last week as the director of the SETI Institute, after 35 years searching the skies for signs of intelligence beyond Earth, has now spoken out for nice aliens. Tarter says she disagrees with Stephen Hawking and movies and TV shows that depict angry aliens hoping to enslave or eat us. She said if aliens were able to visit Earth, that would mean that they have technological capabilities sophisticated enough not to need slaves, food, or other planets. If aliens were to come here, she said, it would be simply to explore.
June 1st marks the beginning of hurricane season in the Atlantic. For more information and a guide to hurricane preparedness, visit earthsky.org. That's our news of the week. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Song of the week this week is It's Not Too Late by the Echocentrics from their aptly titled Sun Shadows album. Enjoy.
Stuck in you.
Earth Sky, we'd love to hear from you. You can find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird joins us with news of the global night sky, an eclipse of the moon, and a very rare and spectacular transit of the planet Venus. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Jorge. Wow, two great events within the span of, you know, just a few hours of each other. So the partial eclipse is on the morning of June 4th, and the transit of Venus is on June 5th or 6th, depending on where you are on the globe.
This is incredible. Two fantastic things happening. Tell us more.
Well, so let's talk about the partial eclipse first. So the partial eclipse of the moon, you might remember, Jorge, there was an eclipse of the sun just a couple of weeks ago. And of course, for there to be an eclipse of the sun, the Earth, sun, and moon need to be aligned with the moon in between the Earth and sun. Now it's 2 weeks later, and the Earth, sun, and moon are still somewhat aligned, but now the Earth is in between the moon and the sun, and the Earth's shadow is going to fall on the moon. The alignment for this eclipse is not so perfect as it was for the eclipse a couple of weeks ago for the solar eclipse. So this lunar eclipse is only a partial eclipse, and it'll be visible on the morning of June 4th if you live in the Americas, or on the evening of June 4th if you live in Asia or Australia.
Any tips to seeing this lunar eclipse?
Well, the very cool thing about a lunar eclipse is that you just don't need a darn thing to see it. All you have to do is just go outside, and if it's dark, and the eclipse is going on and the moon is up, you will see the eclipse. So the eclipse is going to take place around moon set, just before sunrise, on the morning of June 4th for the Americas. So it's pretty much like it was for the eclipse of the sun, where you had to find an unobstructed western horizon to view the eclipse. So that is one thing you'll need from the Americas. And then remember, if you're in Asia or Australia, you'll need a clear sky in the evening of June 4th.
Deborah, how can people find out more about this lunar eclipse?
You can come to earthsky.org and search for the words lunar eclipse. Or actually, you can visit our Facebook page, search for Earth Sky on Facebook. Wow, for the solar eclipse, we got so many amazing pictures. And I'm anticipating we're going to get some very cool and super creative pictures for this eclipse as well.
Earth Sky on Facebook for those pictures. Come visit us. Deborah, what about this transit of Venus now?
The transit of Venus, Jorge, is such a cool event. So there was a transit of Venus in 2004, June 8th of 2004, and transits of Venus come in pairs. So, you know, 2004, now 2012. But before this pair of transits, the last pair of transits of the planet Venus were in the late 1800s. And the next transits, the next pair of transits of Venus won't be, well, the first one of those will be in 2117. So this is the last time in our lifetimes that we're going to get to see a transit of Venus.
What's special about a transit of Venus?
Well, Venus is an inner planet. It goes around the sun in between the Earth and the sun. But most of the time, and Venus passes between us and the sun on a regular basis. That happens all the time. But most of the time when Venus passes in between us and the sun, it goes above or below the sun from our earthly perspective. But on June 5, 6 of the year 2012, Venus is going to pass directly in front of the sun as seen from Earth. And Venus will appear as a little black dot moving across the face of the sun. So that is the transit of Venus.
This is a spectacular sky-watching event, the transit of Venus, something that will not happen again for the rest of this 21st century.
That's right. And so the most important thing in viewing it, Jorge, is to not look at the sun directly with your eyes, because that's very, very dangerous. Don't do it. We have at earthsky.org an article on how to view the transit safely. And inside that article, we have lists of places online where you can go online to see the transit, but you can also use two other techniques to view it. You can find a museum or an astronomy club or a park in your area that's going to be offering a viewing, and that would be a really fun way to see the transit. The whole transit's going to last about 7 hours, so it'd be fun to watch it from start to finish if you could watch it from start to finish, if the sun were up that whole time for you. But it would also be fun just to go and see an hour or two of it, because you could notice that Venus was actually moving on the solar disk. So that's an event in your area is one possibility. There's always the good old projection technique. So an indirect viewing method that's often used for a solar eclipse will work for this transit of Venus as well. What's not going to work as well are your eclipse glasses or your welder's glass, your number 14 or darker welder's glass. Those won't work as well unless your eyesight is a whole lot better than mine. So the little dot of Venus is going to be very, very small on the sun, and you really need some kind of magnification. So, you know, go to a viewing event where people have telescopes with safe solar filters set up, or use an indirect method which causes, you can set it up to where the image of the sun will be larger and you can get a better view of the transit, or watch online. And we have more details on all of those viewing methods. Come to earthsky.org and search for safe Venus transit.
Don't miss it. The transit of Venus. This is a spectacular event. Very rare. This could be the only one you'll get to see.
Well, I mean, it's really cool when events like this happen, because you get a sense of yourself as standing on a planet, moving through space. You know, you get this three-dimensional sense of yourself moving on a world in space. So don't miss it. Transit of Venus, June 5 or 6, depending on your location on the globe.
And if you do take some pictures, share those with us at Earth Sky on Facebook.
We would love to have them.
Next, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We're Earth Sky. We interview the world's top scientists. The Mars Science Laboratory is NASA's newest mission to explore the surface of the planet Mars, and it features a new rover called Curiosity. In early August of 2012, the Curiosity rover will reach the Martian surface after a space journey of 352 million miles, or 567 million kilometers. On the line to talk more about this latest mission to Mars is research geologist John Grotzinger of the California Institute of Technology. Dr. Grotzinger is the project scientist for the NASA Mars Science Laboratory rover mission. Dr. Grotzinger, welcome.
Great, thanks for having me.
What's the status of the mission?
Well, the status of the mission is that we're doing real well right now, and everything is looking good. The instruments have all been checked out and performing well. And the spacecraft is cruising well on its trip to Mars.
What's new about the Mars Science Laboratory?
Well, what's new about this mission is that it takes a significant step towards the challenge of eventual life detection experiments on the surface of Mars. And the way that we do this intermediate step is by asking the question about exploring habitable environments. So in this case, we presume that life may have evolved on Mars, and then ask the question, if it did, what would be the kinds of habitats that microorganisms might reside in? And so what we do then is have a very complex payload of science instruments that allows us to go beyond where other rovers have gone before by taking a mobile chemistry laboratory with many of the pieces of equipment that you would use in a laboratory here on Earth to study very ancient rocks that you might have sampled and look for ancient signs of habitable environments.
What is the Mars Curiosity hoping to find on Mars?
So to be very explicit, the Mars Science Laboratory Curiosity rover is not a life detection mission. We do not have the capability to know if life is present on the surface of the planet today, and we also do not have the ability to look for ancient single-celled microorganisms present within ancient rocks like we can do on Earth. And so what we are is a mission dedicated to the search for habitable environments. And by that, what we mean is a place where there would have been water present, a source of energy, which is what organisms utilize to live with, and then a source of carbon, which is what all organisms for life as we know it are built out of. So water, energy, and carbon for us define the targets that we're searching for with this mission.
The Mars Curiosity rover, it'll roll out early August of 2012. What are some highlights of its early mission during its first explorations of the Martian surface?
So in contrast to previous rover missions like Spirit and Opportunity, Curiosity will unveil itself much more slowly because it's a much more sophisticated spacecraft. So what we're going to do is we'll take small steps that will allow us to systematically unpack all of its capabilities and then be ready to use them on the surface. It'll take about a month until we have done everything that we need to do in checking out scientific instruments and making some initial measurements. But as we do those instrument checkouts, we will make measurements and we will acquire images. And so right away, probably if we're lucky, within a few hours of landing, we might have the first images of the surface of Mars where we land. And then our hope is that in the next day or two, we will see the first color images of the surface of Mars. And then as we go on, we'll be able to make the first weather measurements. We'll then be able to look for water-bearing mineral compounds in the subsurface soils. And then eventually we'll be able to use some of the more sophisticated instruments to look and check for methane in the atmosphere. That'll probably be about 10 days or 2 weeks if all goes well after we land. And then finally, about a month into the mission, we will be free to start drilling the first rocks. And we have a drill. It's about 1.5 centimeters in diameter and penetrates up to 5 centimeters down into a rock. And we get the powder back from that and dump it into the interior of Curiosity, where there are two mobile chemistry labs that give us definitive mineralogy and also tell us about early environmental constraints in the history of Mars, and also allow us to look for carbon if it's present.
What's the most important thing you'd like people today to know about the Mars Science Laboratory?
I think the most important thing is the incredible capability that we are able to construct with the help of thousands of engineers and scientists and land this thing on Mars. Mars is our nearest neighbor, but basically we're going to put a vehicle down on the surface on August 5th that is the size of a car, a small car, and has the capabilities of the analytical laboratories in my home institution at Caltech. This might be two or three rooms full of equipment that we have miniaturized and been able to put in the size of a vehicle, the size of a Mini Cooper. And with that, you're always guaranteed of getting some significant discoveries. We don't know what they're going to be yet, but we're confident that all this instrumentation is going to take us a big step forward in understanding the history of Mars.
Research geologist John Grotzinger. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at Earth Sky Studio B in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors, the Echocentrics, Sleep Good, 100 Flowers, and the Black and White Years. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know won't hurt ya. What you don't know won't end, is there a fight? What you don't know won't hurt ya. But you don't know, but you don't know, but you don't.